And welcome to another edition of Shedding Light. And we're proud to have back a returning guest, Mr. Paul George, Director of Peninsula Peace and Justice. Paul, welcome back to these airwaves.
Well, thank you, Bird. Glad to be back. But I got to tell you, we need to talk. This may be my last appearance here unless we can come to an agreement.
What?
Well, I got thinking this past week when, you know, the NPR commentator Juan Williams got dumped, right?
Yeah, for talking about Arabs.
Yeah, for making racist comments on Fox News Channel. And Fox turned around and gave him a contract for $2 million.
Yeah.
So unless you come up with the big bucks, Bird.
Well, I can't match Fox's order, but Kathy will make you some bread.
Well, the bread is always nicely received.
Yeah, definitely. Well, when you get that call from Fox, Paul, you let me know.
Okay, and you'll outbid him?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we got a big budget here. This is Stanford Radio. we can make you a lot of bread. No, Paul George, this is it's been a little while since you've been on, and so much has happened. First of all, your monthly TV show is going to be tomorrow, and
a week from tomorrow.
Oh, that's okay. There you go.
First Tuesday of every month.
Out on your website, and speak a little bit about that, because you got is it a Stanford professor?
Yeah, Joel Bainan, professor of Middle East history here at Stanford, and one of the country's top experts on the Israel-Palestine conflict. And he just spent a couple of months in Israel and Palestine doing research for a new book that he's writing on Palestinian resistance. And what he was looking at mostly is new resistance movement of young people, both Israeli and Palestinians. And they've formed a group called Anarchists Against the Wall, which is, protesting the separation barrier, the apartheid wall, as some would call it, that the Israelis are building around the West Bank, encroaching on lots and lots of Palestinian land, separating farmers' fields from their homes. They can't even get to their farmlands anymore. So that should be really interesting. Joel is always great. He really knows his stuff, and you'll learn a lot. So that's next Tuesday, November 2nd, which is Election Day. And so instead of sitting home and watching the election returns, come on down to the Community Media Center at 7 p.m. and sit in on the program. And as always on Other Voices, which is the name of the TV program, the audience is a key part of the conversation. I interview our guests for about 20 minutes, and then we turn it over to the audience and viewers to call in. So come on down and see Joel Bainan.
You're on the cutting edge of activism here in the Bay Area, Paul. You're the director of Peninsula Peace and Justice
Center.
There you go. What's on your mind these days? Besides everything.
Well, speaking of the elections, what's on my mind is this growing right-wing mania that I think is really dangerous. And well-financed right-wing mania from corporations as a result of the Citizens United Supreme Court decision. We're just seeing tons of corporate cash with no accountability. We don't know who's putting up the money. Just millions and millions and millions of dollars being poured into the election campaigns, not only for candidates, but for various ballot propositions in states all around the country. We have a couple of heavily financed corporate propositions on our ballot, and maybe we can talk about some of the propositions in a little while. But as the Republican Party moves further and further right, their effect in Congress, it's predicted that right now that it looks like the Republicans will seize a majority in the House of Representatives, probably not the Senate. And if you thought we've had gridlock the last couple of years because of the party of no, it's going to be worse. And there are critical issues to be addressed. Congress has to be working, but it's not going to be functioning very well with the Republicans in charge of one of the houses.
Does it feel like the real goal of some of these people is to make Barack Obama like a what Jimmy Carter was made into, just a one-term president, somebody that they could say, look, see, he didn't do the job? Because the way they talk about him, like he said, like Obama said a couple of last month, you know, they talk about me like a dog.
Yeah. It's been clear, I think, since the election day in 2008 that they've been working on the 2012 election and just absolutely refusing to cooperate, you know, threatening, using the filibuster in the Senate has become routine. They've done it hundreds of times now, as opposed to it, you know, it used to be a rare thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wish the Democrats would call them on it, call their bluff sometime, because instead of actually doing a filibuster, they just threaten to do a filibuster, and then you need to come up with 60 votes in the Senate. This is undemocratic.
All you got to do is threaten now, right?
Yeah.
But what I like what you said. You said you wish the Democrats, and I hear so many people on the left now saying, why don't they get up and talk about what they've done? Why don't they fight them? They got enough votes to do it this way. They don't got to get the 60. And there's so many people pointing out that the Democrats have failed in a major way as well. We the people gave them control of the House, Senate, and the presidency 2 years ago, right?
That's right.
What'd they do with it?
Well, part of the problem is, you know, the Democrats aren't monolithic either. And the Democrats in Congress have their own right wing, generally referred to as the Blue Dog Democrats.
Right.
And they're very fiscally conservative Democrats. I was just reading an interesting article, you know, going back to 2004, 2006, some of these off-year congressional elections, and again in 2008, when Howard Dean was chairman of the Democratic Party. He had what was called a 50-state strategy. It used to be the Democrats wouldn't even bother to try to run candidates in you know, traditional Republican areas, and Dean said, you know, we should give it an effort everywhere, all 50 states.
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up backing some rather conservative Democrats who I think they're not happy they're stuck with now. But, you know, in addition to having the Republicans as a bloc refusing to go along with anything the administration wants to do, there's this small bloc of Blue Dog Democrats who are also tying up a lot of legislation. It's the Blue Dog Democrats who are mostly responsible for the watering down, the substantial watering down of the health care reform. You know, the Democrats knew the Republicans weren't going to go along with any sort of health care reform. They tried compromising with them, but it was really the Blue Dog Democrats, these conservative Democrats, who ended up sinking the public option and some of the better things. Now, it was still an accomplishment. It's a deeply flawed healthcare reform, but it's a start. I'm glad it passed. And it's a reform that needs more reform, but that's not going to happen. There's no chance of that happening if the Republicans take over.
Well, do you really think the Democrats would bring it up again, even if the Republicans didn't take over? It doesn't seem like they would. They promised us, oh yeah, no, we can go back and revisit this, but they all spent so much work and got bribed so much money. Maybe it would be worth it to go do it again just for the amount of bribes. I mean, the amount of lobbyists and the amount of money that was spent on Capitol Hill during the whole healthcare debate, was the figures came out. It was insane, right?
It was. The amount of money being spent on lobbying by the healthcare industry, by Wall Street, you know, it is just out of control.
Totally.
I, if I can switch for a little bit, one of the things I wanted to talk about, and this is related, was I saw a really good movie last night called Inside Story. It's a new documentary by Charles Ferguson. Who's an interesting guy in and of himself. Ferguson made a lot of money in Silicon Valley and was looking around for something good to do with it and decided to go into making documentary movies. And his first one was several years ago called No End in Sight. And it was a really excellent documentary talking about the Iraq War and showing how we were lied into that war. Well, Ferguson has a new one out called Inside Job, and it's about the economic meltdown of 2008 and how we got there. And he names names and names the culprits. And one of the things that one of the people that's interviewed is the chief lobbyist for what's called the Financial Services Roundtable, and it's kind of a trade association for the Wall Street investment bankers. They have 5,000 lobbyists on Capitol Hill. 5,000 lobbyists, Wall Street does. You know, we've only got 535 members in Congress.
So you need 10 for each one.
This is 10 for each one, yeah.
But
this movie, I really want to recommend people go see it. It's playing here in Palo Alto right now at the Cine Arts. Who knows how long it'll be around. So get out and see it. It's really excellent. It really explains some of the complexities of what happened with the financial meltdown in a way that you can really grab onto and finally understand it. And most importantly, it really documents how powerful Wall Street is in Washington, not only in Congress, but in the White House as well. They get their way.
And, always.
You know, during the so-called financial reform debate in Congress, Congressman Barney Frank, the head of the House Banking Committee, came right out and said that, you know, Wall Street owns Congress. It's a huge problem. They have almost unlimited resources, far more so than any counterbalancing organization might have. And going back to the upcoming elections, a lot of the stuff that the Tea Party is spouting is really on behalf of Wall Street, and you know, people don't realize that. You know, especially the Tea Party activists. Yeah, they're angry at Washington, but what they're doing is handing more control back over to Wall Street in the long run. And they don't care about the middle class, except for taking their money from them.
But it is amazing. That's an amazing contradiction in terms when you see these well-minded Americans who are mostly white, but I guess they do have some people of color in their ranks now.
Yeah,
that they got called out by the NAACP for stop being racist. But you see these people, and you know, we all know their anger because we feel the same way. And they are saying, oh, we want our country back. But then they got misdirected. And when you find out what they're really for, it, like you said, they're for giving the power back to the corporations and not following on. And it's almost like they've been misinformed or something.
It is. They, these powerful interests, these moneyed interests, the corporate interests that are pouring all this anonymous cash into the campaign have seized on that anger, and, you know, misdirected it. And, you know, the anger is real, and the concern and worry about the financial conditions right now are real. You have to give that to people, but the answers that they're being channeled toward are the wrong answers. And you know, I'm afraid what it's going to mean. Suddenly, we've gone from stimulus money to the Republicans screaming that we have to balance the budget. This is exactly what happened after Franklin Roosevelt got his New Deal started at the height of the Depression. Washington got freaked by the rising deficits, and they cut back on the stimulus spending and tried to balance the budget and reduce the deficits. And the country slipped back into a deep recession again.
Until World War II.
Yeah.
Until the military industrial complex was born.
Yep.
So as anyway, an activist, though, do you think that if the Tea Party was approached the correct way by intelligent people who knew what they were talking about, do you think the Tea Party could be put back on track and you could kind of harness that anger? Because everybody in the country is mad about the corruption and the money in politics, right? Everybody feels the way the Tea Party does. They just haven't been misdirected. And do you think there's any way to grab the Tea Party and kind of, it's kind of like this stampede. It's a small stampede, though.
Yeah.
They're a very fringe group, right? You know, the media talks about the Tea Party. We're talking about them right now. But what are we talking about?
Yeah.
100,000 people, maybe?
Yeah, I wish the, you know, the mainstream media would give as much attention to you know, the left as they do to this.
Well, the grassroots movements,
yeah,
definitely.
Absolutely.
Well, what do you think of this Jon Stewart thing coming up this week? Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert. You know, a lot of people are playing it off like it's a joke. You know, their rally to restore sanity,
right,
out on the mall. And it feels more like an answer to what Glenn Beck tried to do 2 months ago.
Yeah, you know, we'll have to see what they do and what, you know, who the speakers are and stuff.
Well, Jon Stewart is pretty.
Jon Stewart is one sharp guy.
He is.
You know,
he is.
And
he's become a voice for sanity in the country. Don't you think?
The you know, one of the things I really like about Jon Stewart that I wish the rest of, you know, the real news shows. You
mm-hmm.
know, he's always sure to say it's, you know, it's fake news.
Right.
But one of the things he routinely does is when a politician makes a statement, they go back and they find, you know, the video of these politicians contradicting themselves previously.
Yeah.
Now, if a comedy program, you know, can do that on a regular basis, these, you know, large news operations that really are news operations should be able to do that as well.
Maybe they don't want to, though. The ones that do want to,
yeah, they
do.
Yeah.
Rachel Maddow on MSNBC is doing that all the time now. She kind of took a page out of Jon Stewart's book.
Uh-huh.
Keith Olbermann is doing that now. I think they're kind of feeding off each other. And I don't know if it started with Amy Goodman, because we also have a counter spin out there on the radio.
Uh-huh.
And that's the half-hour program that comes out at the end of every week. And they kind of go over not just the news and the media, but also politicians who contradict themselves.
Yep.
And it's a lot more hopeful now than it was 10 years ago when Bush first got in. 10 years ago, when you looked around, there wasn't a lot of pushback in the media. Now there's a lot more than there was.
Yeah. And, you know, there have always been good reporters out there. That,
sure.
You know, doing their job, but you know, if a good investigative piece appears in the Chicago Tribune, well, the people who live in Chicago may read about it, but if it doesn't get picked up in the New York Times, it's like it never happened, you know.
Yeah.
So you know, there are good reporters on TV, radio, and in newspapers doing a lot of work, but you're right, there are some really hopeful signs, especially as media and journalism are going through these profound transformations right now.
That
we don't yet know how this is all going to come out, but we're, you know, right in the middle of something profound. You have new organizations like ProPublica,
mm-hmm.
Which is doing some great investigative work, and
yeah,
you know, a whole new financial structure to support that, and you know, they're teaming up with some of the more major and mainstream outlets, and so you know, they're having a real impact.
Mm-hmm.
And
what do you think about the internet, Paul, as far as, because you and I are from another generation and we've learned to use it a little bit, nothing like the kids that were born into it.
Yeah,
the internet babies and the Facebook and the Twitterers and all that, and some of the Rachel Maddow, and I know some of the other reporters are using it now, but do you feel like the internet is going to have an impact? Because we know that Barack Obama got elected in a large part of the people that went to work for him and used the power of the internet,
mm-hmm.
right, to get that young voter out there.
Yeah, the Obama campaign, and to a lesser extent, Howard Dean 4 years before when he made a run. He was the first one to really break through and use the internet. And, you know, he provided some valuable lessons to those who followed.
Yeah.
You know, it's, as an organizer, there's a little bit of a mixed bag. I mean, the internet email has made it a lot easier and cheaper for us to reach several thousand people at one shot. But there's kind of an isolating factor about the internet as well.
What do you mean?
People sitting at home alone looking at a computer screen, and they may get an alert and, you know, send off an email to, you know, the White House or something as a result of an alert that we sent out. But
they're still just sitting at home.
They're still just sitting at home. You know, we one of the things we routinely do are, you know, street demonstrations, because I think that serves an important part of, you know, the toolkit, all these different things that we do. People aren't coming out like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're sitting at home and twittering the White House, I guess, or something. So
maybe that is a new frontier, though. What do you think?
But the information that's available is you can't underestimate how important this is to be able to sit down and, you know, read a story in the New York Times and then see how the same story is being covered in London and in Paris and in Berlin, you know, and
the world's at the tip of your fingers now.
Yeah.
With the internet.
And it's always very interesting to make those comparisons, you know, how the story, you know, before we went on the air, you mentioned WikiLeaks, the document dump that just happened with all the Iraq War documents. So, you know, you look at, was it yesterday's New York Times? The front page story is by John Burns, has held Julian Assange, the public face of WikiLeaks. Is, you know, it was just a hit piece on him, trying to make him look like a mental case. Whereas in England, the newspapers are all over the role of British soldiers in torture and prisoner abuse, and saying we need to investigate this. So, you know, it's very different take on it. Now, you know, the Times did do some good coverage of what's in the WikiLeaks, but the featured article on the WikiLeaks dump was how crazy Julian Assange is.
Well, we all knew they were going to attack him, you know. Paul George is our guest for the hour, the director of Peninsula Peace and Justice. He also does a monthly TV show at the Community Media Center, Palo Alto Cable Access. And that can be viewed not only on cable TV around the peninsula, but on the internet as well, right?
Right. We broadcast live at 7 o'clock on the first Tuesday of every month, so it's going to be November 2nd. And the broadcast is, in addition to being on local cable TV on Channel 27, it's also broadcast live on the internet at the Media Center's website, which is MidPen Media, MIDPENmedia.org. And just follow their links for the online streaming and select Channel 27, and you can pick it up that way. And then afterwards, the videos are on our website for free streaming. You can just pick it up and watch the program. The last month's is up there now. In fact, we have a lot of speakers that come, and we routinely videotape them all and put the videos up on our website. So right now you could go to the website and see a terrific talk by Robert Scheer, talking about his newest book, The Great American Stick-Up, which would, by the way, be a good companion to this movie, Inside Job. They're both pretty much telling the same story. About the culprits. I mean, there are people criminally liable for what happened. So,
yeah, the information's out there. People are getting it. I don't know if they're responding to it correctly, but definitely everybody's and since we've spoken last, you featured Robert Fisk live in Palo Alto.
Yeah.
Robert Scheer was just after that or just before it?
Scheer was just before. Mm-hmm. Scheer was here on September 11th, and then Bob Fisk was here on the 25th. The video, unfortunately, from Fisk may not make it onto the website.
What happened?
One of the cameras malfunctioned and was out of focus a lot.
Uh-oh.
So our editor tried to put it together, but really couldn't work around too many glitches.
No,
but the audio is good, so we'll put the audio up on there.
Okay,
because he gave a great talk.
He's a powerful guy, definitely.
He is, and he's also a fun guy. You know, to think about what he's been through and what he's seen as a war correspondent.
Yeah,
I mean, just some of the most horrifying things a human being could ever witness.
And he's getting older now, too, isn't he?
Yeah, he's 65 now. He started out his talk by mentioning how he realized he was taking a train from Sacramento down to Fresno and was informed that he could get the senior citizen discount. He said he briefly considered refusing the discount to kind of hold on to his youth a little bit.
All right.
But he's an interesting guy. Great sense of humor. I had to pick him up in Los Banos to bring him up here.
So really?
I spent 2 hours in the car with him.
Oh, man.
And,
that must have been interesting.
Yeah, he is. He's really into old American television.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Paul George, the guest. Paul, let's talk about these referendums,
yeah,
these ballot measures that America, that California is going to be voting on,
yeah,
and there's quite a few of them this year, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a few. There's a couple. You know, I was talking earlier about the corporate money that's being poured into these various campaigns,
mm-hmm.
All anonymously. You know, the groups like Karl Rove's new group, American Crossroads, raising tens of millions of dollars, and we have no idea who's giving it.
You can see it on the other end in the TV commercials. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If people are really paying attention, they can see, they can hear it on the radio and hear it in TV commercials. You just see this juggernaut of information coming at you.
Yeah, there's, you know, it's become a topic for the news to cover, a lot of the talking heads. David Brooks, the columnist, the right-wing columnist for the New York Times, has been on this jag that, you know, all this money doesn't really make any difference anyway. Well, you have to wonder why people like Karl Rove, who are very effective political activists and organizers, are after all this money to put ads on TV. If it doesn't make any difference, why are they doing it? We know it makes a difference. So anyway, here in California, we have there's two in particular that are getting a lot of out-of-state corporate funding. There's Proposition 23.
The oil initiative.
Yeah. That's mostly being funded by Valero and Tesoro
oil
companies out of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And
why don't you briefly explain that, Proposition 23?
Proposition 23. 2 years ago, the California legislature passed AB 32, which is climate initiative. It will put California on the leading edge to address climate change, and it's loaded with all kinds of good stuff that comes, you know, gets phased in over many years, and it's really forward-looking environmental legislation.
So the legislature voted that in,
yes,
and that's good, and we like that.
Yes.
Okay,
and
what has that got to do with 23?
It even had bipartisan support. You know, it wasn't just the Democrats that passed it.
Both sides of the aisle.
It's a good...
Arnold was even in favor of it, right?
Arnold was in favor of it.
Damn!
Proposition 23 basically... overturns it. Negates it. And that's why all this oil money is pouring in.
Does anybody in California think it has a chance? I mean, we got to talk about it. We got to put it out there. Everything I've heard from every Californian I know, including the governor.
Yeah.
Now, not that it's a shoe-in, because, you know, but Are you encouraged with the amount, you know, right up to the governor who?
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen as much yes on 23 advertising, for example, as I would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be because the big money interests are looking at this and saying
bad pick.
Yeah, we're not throwing more money down down this hole. But you know, it is important that it be defeated, and
sure.
It's also important for people to know that it's Texas oil behind this proposition.
Well, this might be one of those classic deals where the right information got out at the right time, the people found out where the money was coming from, who was funding it, and not only that. What it did, it wiped out something that was going to be good for all of us, something that we already decided on, like you said, 2 years ago.
Right.
And so the information got out at the right time, because a lot of times it's the fact that the people didn't know, or they didn't get the information, or it was kept from them, or the other side comes up with all the money and they put down the wrong information.
Yeah, there's been a very impressive coalition of organizations that have come together to oppose Proposition 23,
mm-hmm.
including, you know, Sierra Club and teachers unions, Credo Mobile, which is a very progressive phone company based here in Palo Alto.
Hmm. And then Arnold's in bed with all them over this one, too, huh?
Yeah.
That's why. Did you ever think you'd see the day?
Well, you know, Arnold has surprised us a little bit here and there. Generally, I'll be glad to see him gone. There's another one on the ballot, Proposition 26, which is also getting a lot of corporate money, and this one is not as much on the radar. This one would require a 2/3 vote in the legislature to impose fees and things, and what this is aimed at is the structure whereby corporations are fined for environmental pollution, environmental damage. And this is trying to change it so that it would require a 2/3 vote in the legislature to impose those sorts of things.
Gee, I wonder who wrote that? Who put that one
in? It's a polluters get out of jail free card.
Oh.
You know? So, and this one is also being financed by a lot of out-of-state corporate money.
So a yes on 26 would help the corporations.
Yes.
And a no on 26 would...
No on 23 and no on 26, very, very definitely.
Okay.
Then shall we just go through some of the others?
Do it.
Sure. First of all, we've got Proposition 19.
Yeah, baby.
Legalizing marijuana. Now, right now, the polls have just shifted that it's losing now.
Really?
So, you know, I think this will happen in California eventually. This bill, I'm going to vote yes on it, but there are a lot of problems with it, one of which is that in trying to make a bill that people would broadly accept, the Proposition 19 allows each local jurisdiction to make the final decision on whether marijuana can be legally sold within the town limits, et cetera.
What's wrong with that?
Well, we could end up having a whole patchwork of different laws coming out of this. Although, you know, once the concept is endorsed, the legislature could probably feel empowered to straighten out some of the things. So, you know, it's kind of a backdoor way of getting to legalization, but you know, I think it's time that we ended prohibition in this country anyway. So,
but even if California votes on that and votes yes, the federal government through the Department of Justice has already said that they're not gonna honor that, and they will come in and they'll raid whatever they want to raid, and they'll bust whoever they want to bust, right?
Well, that's what they've said, and
usually if they say it, they mean it.
Well, we found out in the Bush administration that they really did mean it. The Bush administration made a major point of busting medical marijuana outfits.
Yeah, they got really ugly about that.
So, but you know, California is pretty important when it comes to the Electoral College and presidential politics. And whereas the Bush administration would have probably written off California, I don't think the Obama administration is going to go out of its way to tick us off out here.
So you think that it's more just talk?
Yeah, they will probably be looking at large growers or something like that. I do think it's mostly just talk.
Now, if it passes, the city of Oakland says it's going to get into the growing business.
Mm-hmm.
So could we possibly see the federal government trying to arrest the city of Oakland?
You know,
what'd they do? Would they come and occupy Oakland? Take over City Hall?
I don't know. Take the mayor out in handcuffs?
Yeah. But, I mean, theoretically, it could be possible, right?
Theoretically,
if the city of Oakland went ahead. I like what you said about the fact that if Obama wants to get reelected, he's got to win California.
Yeah,
and therefore he might not let his attorney general Michael Holder start raiding some stuff that California has already voted on.
Right.
It would be a good test, too. And I guess a lot of these laws that we've seen overturned over the years, and even amendments, all started out as little movements where the people had to test it out, right? They had to vote on it or fight for it.
Right.
And it didn't all flip at once. It was like, oh, we test it, and then we'll come back and try it again. And, you know, maybe California's got to be the first cutting-edge state that does the thing.
It wouldn't be the first time that California has set the course for the rest of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Just like with this AB 32, it's the best environmental climate change law in the books in the country, and that's why it's so important to defeat Proposition 23, so it has a chance to kick in and show that this is the way to go to reduce global warming.
Mm-hmm. But you're still going to vote yes on 19?
Yeah. Yeah.
The marijuana initiative.
Because it is a step forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, it will be tested down the road and probably tweaked and adjusted by the legislature.
Another one of the insane things about that, too, about the whole marijuana issue is people are in jail because of marijuana for using it.
Yeah.
And maybe even for selling amounts of it, ounce or whatever. But
yeah.
I mean, just the mere thought of somebody being in jail for marijuana seems insane to me.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And, clogging up the jails for that?
And the amount of time. Of course, you know, in California now, they Schwarzenegger just signed a law that reduces it to an infraction anyway for possession of an ounce or less. So it's like getting a parking ticket. So, you know,
that's on the books right now?
That's the law in California now.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
well, that's a good thing.
So it'll be interesting to see how this will play out. You know, my biggest concern is that, big tobacco and big pharmaceutical companies will jump in and take over the business.
I thought they'd already planned to.
Yeah, I think so. So anyway.
Maybe that's why Oakland did the smart thing, too, by stepping out in front and saying, we'll get into the business ourselves, so they can't be headed off the pass by some big corporation.
Yeah. It's, heard a really interesting and rather lengthy report on the radio, I guess it was last week, talking to a lot of people who live up in Humboldt County.
They're mad.
And they're not happy about it. They're not happy about it.
They also say if we do pass it, it's going to lower the price. And that's what they're not happy. The longtime growers that have supplied the pot clubs for all these years, they get, I think they get $4,000 a pound. Somewhere between $3,000 and $4,000 a pound,
uh-huh.
And it might lower the price more than half.
Yeah,
pounds might be going for $1,000 or $2,000, and yeah, they won't be able to make that kind of money they were making. Sorry.
Yeah,
marijuana shouldn't be that expensive anyway,
right.
Should it?
Yeah. Well, one of the things they were saying on this report is that family growers will still be able to make a living even at the expected reduced prices. So.
Yeah.
It's the quality control that might be a concern.
Yeah, that, and they'll have to take shorter vacations. Talking to Paul George, director of Peninsula Peace and Justice, and we're going over the ballot initiatives that are coming up a week from tomorrow. And people can vote right now, can't they, Paul?
Yeah.
We have early voting in California.
Early voting, and if you're a vote by mail person, you should be sure to get your ballot filled out and
you mail it in. But if you wanted to early vote, you wouldn't go to your precinct where you go. You go to your a registrar voter's office, right?
Right, right.
Wherever that is, and that's county by county, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not easy to do. I think the only place in Santa Clara County is to go down to San Jose to the registrar.
Mm-hmm. San Mateo County is the same way. I actually vote there myself, and it's not hard to find. San Mateo County is the one up on 92 in Ralston, uh-huh. And you can walk right in there. It's open every day, and they're very cooperative. They're very cool. If you ask for a ballot, they'll give it to you. And I always vote there the day before the election, uh-huh. Just to not have to stand in line, you know? Yeah. And it's easy. It's simple.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing vote by mail for a long time, but I actually usually just go over to the precinct on election day and hand in my vote by mail ballot there.
Oh.
'Cause I just like to see what turnout looks like and, you know, who's there and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And make sure the post office doesn't lose your mail.
Right. And make sure it gets there. A lot of states have early voting now. And
I noticed that. I saw a report on that the other day.
And apparently, you know, the returns so far are not looking as dire for the Democrats as some of their predictions might have us believe.
Good. Well, maybe we can get something done after this election.
Be nice to think that the all this corporate money won't pay off for them, although mm-hmm. I'm afraid it will.
What else we got on the ballot poll?
Well, then we've got Proposition 20, which is...
Now, what is that?
This is another one... this is a homegrown right winger with lots of money. Put this one on the ballot. It's it would give the congressional redistricting that happens every 10 years after the census would hand it over to an appointed commission, and this is really seen as a way of redistricting that's going to undercut the power of the Democratic Party in California. So you want to vote no on that one. You know, this is and there's
so the commission would be a bad thing.
This commission, there's.
It would be appointed, not elected.
Right.
For now, life?
No, I don't think it's for life. There's another one on here, Proposition 27, which addresses the redistricting commissions that California now has. In 2008, we passed a proposition, I think it was Prop 11, that for the California legislature, the redistricting would no longer be done by the legislature, which is the way it's done now for congressional and for state legislator districts.
So whoever's in power has more power to do that than the power.
So Prop 11 on the 2008 ballot set up a citizens commission. And that seems to be a pretty good, pretty balanced commission. People apply for it. My former coworker, Julia, actually applied and made it almost to the end, almost made it onto the commission. She was in the final pool of applicants. But the whole process seemed pretty open. They have a number of seats reserved for people who are registered Democrat and Republican and Green and not registered with the party, and keeping it balanced at income levels, and it's a pretty complex system.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a measure on the ballot, Prop 27, which would do away with that and send it back to the legislature. And a lot of progressive groups are supporting overturning that. And I frankly have to do a little more research on this one because I thought this redistricting commission seemed like a pretty good idea, but maybe something is not working out properly. And a lot of these progressive groups are recommending a yes vote on 27 and no on Prop 20. And the thing to keep in mind is that Proposition 20 affects congressional districts for the federal level. Prop 27 is just our California legislative districts.
You mean they're different? You can have one area for just the state representatives, and then a whole other area for the congressional representatives.
Yeah, they're, you know, the districts now, there's some overlap, but not a lot. So, you know, the for example, the congressional district that we're in,
San Mateo County, right?
District 14, which is represented by Anna Eshoo.
That's Santa Clara County, right?
Most of Santa Clara County, but some San Mateo County and out to the coast, and actually snakes its way down into Santa Cruz.
What?
Yeah, it's a funny-looking district, and it's changed a lot over the years. And, of course, redistricting is pretty important, and it comes up every 10 years.
If people knew how that really worked, too, they'd be just shocked because, who you know, the people that have drawn this up in the past are obviously have ulterior motives, and they do. They do these things where they'll connect San Mateo and a little bit of Santa Clara and then snake down in Santa Cruz that the Congressman Piombo, the district he was in over in Contra Costa County, They redistricted that thing, and it looked like this very strange shape that covered all kinds of territory that wasn't even connected.
Yeah, you end up with some really
strange bedfellows.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of this stuff ends up in the courts, and a lot of these jerry-rigged districts have been overturned by the federal courts because it's obvious that they're trying to do it. You know, Texas,
that takes years, though, right?
Texas is infamous for this. This is, you know, why all these Republicans are coming out of Texas.
Right, they had all these scandals.
They redistricted Democrats right out of the game, you know.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
The whole thing can be rigged up like this. Talking to Paul George, Director of Peninsula Peace and Justice, going over the ballot for next week.
So the other major thing on the ballot, there's a good one on Prop 21, gives some money to the state parks to keep our state parks open and maintained. You know, Schwarzenegger has been vowing to, you know, threatening to close them down. A lot of parks are closed several days a week now as it is. Maintenance is being deferred. So Prop 21 would add $18 to the car registration fee, you know, that we pay every year. And that money would go to the state parks to keep them open. So that's a good one to vote yes on.
Mm-hmm.
The other really major one that's on here is Proposition 25, and that's for a majority vote to pass the budget in Sacramento in the state legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the budget has to be passed by two-thirds, and that gives the Republicans, the minority Republicans in Sacramento, essentially veto power over any state budget. And it's just a bad way to go. It's why our budgets are always delayed and why they're not very good. And so Proposition 25 would just say state budgets require simply a majority vote to pass. It does leave in place, I believe, the two-thirds required for increasing taxes, but the state budget itself can be passed with a simple majority vote.
So how do we want to vote on that?
We want to vote yes on that, seeing as majority rules is kind of the basis of democracy. So that's Prop 25, and vote yes on that one.
And you're listening to Paul George here on Shedding Light and getting into the ballot for next week. Hope everybody plans on voting. You can vote early, like Paul said, and that's coming up next Tuesday.
I always like to say vote early, vote often.
Yeah, right.
Anyway.
Paul, so. Just shifting gears now, that major catastrophe that happened in San Bruno with the gas line. And there's going to be an investigation, and apparently PG&E came out and said that there was a power failure, and then they had a power surge, and there was some other stuff. Have you heard anything on this?
Not beyond the general outline that you just gave.
Okay.
You know, this is something I think we're going to be dealing with more and more in the future, is catastrophic infrastructure failures like
that. Right.
Bridges collapsing. I mean, our water supply system here in California is old. It's really old. And there could be problems with that. These gas pipelines, you know, that same pipeline that blew up in San Bruno runs all the way down the peninsula. It's the same pipes, the same line. It runs under Palo Alto.
Really?
Most people didn't know this, you know.
Wow.
People in San Bruno didn't even know that they had this big gas pipeline under them. So, you know, going back to what we were talking about at the beginning, in terms of the ongoing economic crisis in this country, rather than cutting back on the stimulus spending, this would be the time to keep spending, even though it'll add to the deficit. And we have a crying need to fix up our deteriorating infrastructure around, not only around the state, but all around the country. And that could create a lot of jobs and, you know, secure a safer future for all of us. So rather than this deficit reduction talk, we should be talking about how many billions more we should be spending on infrastructure, because we need it. People need the jobs, and we're just, you know, the situation is crying out for that to happen.
And didn't the White House propose some new multi-$50 billion package more spending on the infrastructure? Didn't he come up with an infrastructure plan recently?
Yes, he did, and it was $50 billion. And you know, the stimulus bill that did get out of Congress was good. It did create jobs. It did save millions of jobs. But it's under attack now, and it should have been much more. But the right wing in Congress, including the right wing Democrats,
the blue dogs,
you know, cut it back and cut it back. So, you know, the administration got what they could out of Congress, and it was certainly helpful. The statistics show that. There'd be even more unemployed people right now if it hadn't been for that stimulus bill.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't enough, and we need to keep going. We need to learn the lessons of the 1930s, where, as I said at the outset of the program, we're repeating the mistakes of the 1930s, when Roosevelt just got the New Deal programs in place, and then everybody panicked over the deficit. Well, deficit spending in the time of economic crisis is one of the things that the federal government is supposed to do. And it's investment in our economy and in our society, and we can deal with the deficits down the road. But right now, we need to put people to work, and we need to fix up the infrastructure. And so, you know, all this talk about reducing the deficit and cutting back spending is absolutely the wrong thing. It's totally backwards. We'll probably have a definite example of that pretty soon, because, you know, England just lowered the budget acts and cut huge amounts from their budget, and they're not out of the woods on the recession either. So we're going to see the effect there.
And France as well, too. They're having major protests in France.
Yeah.
Paul, as the director of Peninsula Peace and Justice, you're out there on the cutting edge of activism here in America. And your website is peaceandjustice.org, by the way, if people want to go on that. What do you see as just the short-term future here? You know, whatever way the election goes, we're kind of headed down these roads where we see the crumbling infrastructure. We see these forays into foreign countries that we're in, and we're not just in Iraq and Afghanistan, we're all over the world.
Right.
This empire is broke, and it doesn't have money to stretch itself out this far. It's not looking too good.
You know, the struggle is going to be, as it has often been, is the interests of the people, the majority of the people, versus the very powerful corporate interests in this country. You know, Mussolini defined fascism as the combination of state and corporate power. And if anything has defined the late 20th and early 21st century, it's that, the growing power of Wall Street, of the multinational corporations, working behind the scenes with their power and their money, perverting democracy and undermining the middle class. There are reasons why we have greater income inequality in this country now than we ever had, because it was planned that way.
Mm-hmm.
They've been picking our pockets, and you know, these right wingers come around and talk about you know, Obama is a socialist, he's redistributing the wealth. Well, folks, Wall Street has been redistributing the wealth from us up the ladder for the past century or more.
Yeah, and especially in the last 10 years.
That's the defining struggle. The last time we had income inequality like this was just before the Great Depression. I don't think it's coincidence that this income inequality, the income gap, leads to severe economic dislocation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's really always the struggle. Is against these corporate interests who see, you know, foreign wars as profit opportunities, who see you know, these casino games on Wall Street as profit opportunities.
Sure.
Never mind that they're throwing millions of people out of their homes through foreclosures, cheating on the foreclosures. As long as it's profitable, they're going to keep doing it. And it's devastating to the middle class, to ordinary working people. And to the extent that we can, we have to keep shedding light on these, you know, corporate powers and what they really want, what they're after. What they're after is your wallet and mine.
Paul, you keep up your good work. We'll have you back on as soon as we can. Peaceandjustice.org is the website. And I want to thank you for your time, Paul.
Thanks. And you'll have my $2 million contract next month?
Oh, sure. 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 As soon as Fox sends it in.
Okay.
Okay, man.
Thanks, Bird.
Thanks again for tuning in. This is KZSU Stanford. And do want to remind everybody, the movie Paul was talking about, Inside Job, is still playing at the Camera Cinemas in the Prune Yard in Campbell. Also up in San Francisco at the Embarcadero Center. Cine Arts here in Palo Alto. Cine Arts in Palo Alto. And also in Berkeley, Berkeley Shattuck Cinemas. So check it out. Inside Job. Charlie Ferguson's Inside Job.